to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello and welcome to Shoot the Defence on FNX, brought to you by My Sportswear Youth Energy and Save Association. I'm your host, Stel, and on this edition of Shoot the Defence, I was joined by Rob Seltzer, founder at Top Corner Recruitment. Now, Top Corner Recruitment is actually the world's first football recruitment service. I've never heard or seen anything like this before in my life, so it's a fairly new area for me. New questions, new things to find out, so let's see how this one goes. It'll be very, very interesting. All right, so Rob, man, welcome to Shoot the Defence. I mean, it's been a while since you and I spoke, but we finally arranged something. How's it going?
Yeah, good, mate. Good, thank you. It's a long time coming, but glad to eventually do it.
Fantastic, mate. It's great having you on. And, you know, the last time we spoke, it was in detail. I've got a rough idea of what Top Corner Recruitment is and what you guys do. And I know you founded the company. What's it all about? Please tell me, because I'm trying to get my head around it.
Yeah, mate, sure. So, it's all about putting the power back, really, with the clubs and the players. I'm not saying that there's some good agents out there, some really good agents out there. But we've spoken to a number of professional clubs, professional players, ex-players, managers, that type of stuff. And what we're finding is that a lot of them are fairly fed up with the agents. We've spoken to, like, one guy I'm speaking to, a club in the UK, said his manager doesn't pick up the phone to agents anymore. They just have he has a trusted network of people within the game, and he gets his players through them. So what we decided to do is basically cut out the agent and let the clubs and the players speak directly to each other. So then a club can ask the player what they want to know, player can ask the club what they want to know, to make sure that, you know, the move's right for both parties. A lot of the time you see some absolutely brilliant players not fit in at big clubs where you think they should do, and the chances are that the move, one of the parties should never have really made that move. Cultural-wise, club-wise, just the way the manager might play, all that type of stuff. And so we thought we'd try and fill that void.
Okay, brilliant. So when was this founded then? How long have you been doing this?
We really started going in December, so we haven't been going a year yet. So, like, as with everything, because we're very website-based, so we had to get our website going. And then we had to spread the word to players. So our players range from, we've got international standard players on there, right the way through to semi-professional and amateur players.
Right.
Because we want those type of guys as well, that, to get as much exposure globally as possible. There's some fantastic players out there not playing professional football, and your clubs here in Australia that would kill for a guy that's been playing semi-pro football in the Ryman Premier League, for example. You come out here, play a decent standard of football in Australia, have a great time, and potentially, you know, carve out a career here in Australia or in Asia. So it's the gateway to that.
So what's the process, mate? What do you approach them? Do they come to you?
Yeah, no, it's a bit of both, really. It's a bit of both. Initially, it was 100% us approaching players. We went on LinkedIn. There's a lot of players on LinkedIn. They're looking for moves. And then it's kind of grown. It's got word of mouth. And we're getting people sign up from all over the shop. So we've got lots of European and British-based players, Australian-based players, American, South American, European, Scandinavian, you name it, they're signing up from all over the shop. So the database has blown up. We've got a lot of interest from clubs as well, from around the world. We've got League One and down to Ryman Prem in the UK. A couple of Scottish League clubs here in Australia, clubs in the States, Scandinavia, and a couple of Eastern European clubs as well.
Excellent. So all of this is through word of mouth and LinkedIn, really?
Pretty much, yeah. Then what it is in the football, because it's very much who you know.
Right.
And we didn't know anyone at the start. That's fortunately changed now. We're making some good contacts and good connections that are helping put us in contact with other people that can do things and know other people. So it's very much a snowball effect. So initially, it's a hard slog. It's a lot of hard slog, a lot of late nights and early mornings calling various different time zones. But it's starting to pay off, and it's starting to bear a bit of fruit.
No, absolutely, mate. And you mentioned the time zone and all that. I mean, is that the major obstacle you have? I'm sure there are far more than that.
My partner, he's based out of out of the UK, so we do have both time zones covered. Because I'm obviously here in Australia, but yeah, I mean, the biggest hurdle we've got is a brand new concept. So it's getting people to trust it. So players to trust that we're not talking rubbish and that we're trying to screw them out of something. We're not. It's completely free to sign up to put your profile on our database, and it's also getting clubs to trust the fact that we've got decent players, and you know, to go away from the tried and trusted way of doing things, everything through an agent or an intermediary, which has been how it's been for the past 25, 30 years in football. So that's probably the biggest hurdle, is getting that trust, and then obviously getting in front of or speaking to the right people and selling it to them.
Right, that's understandable. The thing is, the way that social media is now, anyone can have a YouTube account, anyone can have a Twitter account, and let's be 100% honest, you and I both know that there are players out there who really aren't that good, but thanks to YouTube and video editing, they can make them look like Messi. How do you get the teams to trust you first and foremost?
And that's a fine point and a great question, and that's one of the first things that people say, because yeah, as you rightly said, I've got two left feet, and according to my highlights, I should be on 450 grand a week. When players sign up, we do a background check on them, and so to make sure they are who they say they are, they've played who they said they play, and we ask when people start talking to clubs and players talk to directly to each other, then we get referees from that player. So when we can send them through to clubs, saying these are independent referees coming from previous clubs, got a reference.
Right.
That we have to see them anyway. So if they are based in the UK, then they go and see them and go check them out. If they're based in Europe, then they'll probably know someone that will have seen them at some point, depending on how high profile the player is and how big the club is.
Right, and what about language barriers then? Because, I mean, I don't know how many languages you speak, if you're bilingual or not, but do you have players that don't speak English that just approach you randomly?
Oh, for sure. And I've got a very loose grasp of English, let alone any other language. So, we've been involved in a couple of discussions. Once a player and a club are in contact with each other, we step out. It's completely down to the player and the club to iron out all their requirements. We will be involved if they want us to be involved. And a couple of times we have been, especially we've had a couple of South Americans talking to clubs in Asia, and that was fairly difficult. There was, but we were involved in that as a go between with the language problem.
Great stuff. So, what's your view on third-party ownership, mate? Because I'm pretty sure you must have had a few footballers that come up to you and say, look, I've got two or three people that own me, so to speak. How would you deal with something like this?
To be honest with you, still, that's a real tough one. Because our MO is, and our point of difference is, and what we're trying to get to the clubs is, go through us, you don't have to go through anyone else, you're only going through the player. Now, if a player is owned by third parties, then yeah, we've had a couple that have been owned by like two or three people, as you rightly said. There's a lot of red tape involved and a lot of grey area involved. And to be honest with you, we don't want to be a part of it. There's money going on all over the shop. You don't know who's legit, who's not legit. And it's one of those, I mean, obviously when Tevez and Mascherano turned up at West Ham and no one really knew who this Kia Jurabchin was, and all of a sudden someone else owns Tevez and And that time, it confuses people with a hell of a lot more money and a lot more time and a lot of resources than us. So we try and stay well clear of that.
What about Brexit then? Is that going to have any impact on what you're doing?
Probably. We're still waiting to see. We're still waiting to see the way that the European Union, if British players need visas to go everywhere in Europe. That's all to be determined. I think if they do, then yes, it will. Then obviously they're going to be visa players. They're going to be foreign players, and a lot of leagues have a foreign player limit, because obviously they want to promote from within and expand their football in their country. So that's all to be determined. And we can't really answer that until we know exactly what they're going to do with the visas and stuff like that. So fingers crossed it doesn't affect it too much, but I think there will be a knock-on effect somehow.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned red tape earlier. Which nation would you say you've dealt with or worked with to bring in players and transfer players? Which one have gone smoothest?
Smoothest?
Yeah.
The UK's gone pretty smooth. Because at the moment, if they're just European players and they're available, most of our players on our website on a free transfers have been, they're out of contract or they've basically got something with a club that's allowing them to leave. So UK's pretty good. Australia, moving people here, we moved a couple of American guys to Australia, and that was seamless. It was really, really good. They just got working holiday visas, because getting a visa here for Australia is pretty easy. Just get a working holiday visa, and then you can play for a year on that. So that was fairly good. Scandinavia, there was, because of the language barrier and transfer windows, and a lot of Scandinavian clubs like to get Scandinavian players in, a bit more sceptical. And Asia's tough, because there's a lot of money floating around in Asia, but there's a lot of people that pretend they know what they're doing,
right?
And pretend they're some people they're not. So you've got to be real, real careful when you're trading around in Asia.
Yeah, I've actually had a couple of Asian footballers approach me on LinkedIn asking me to help them find the club, which is bizarre. I'm just a football host, mate. That's all I do. So right, you've got a bit of a twang in your accent. You're not from Australia, are you?
No, I'm originally from Essex. So I've been here 7 years. So I'm acclimatised nicely. So every time it's cold and wet, and everyone says I should be used to this weather, I'm not anymore. I'm used to perma sun and 30 degrees. I was one of those typical English idiots that turned up to Australia thinking it never gets below 25. And let me tell you, it gets bloody freezing at times. So anyone that's coming out here, bring a jacket or a jumper at some point, because you're going to need it. Trust me.
That's right. And you support Crystal Palace, is that right?
I do. For my sins, I support the Palace. Exciting times, I'd say. It's exciting times at the moment, but it's nervous times as well. Like, I think we've got to stick with De Boer. I like what De Boer's doing, and I think we needed a change. We've been treading water now for, I'd say, 2 years. Like, the first couple of years are just staying in the Premiership, really. We've now got a bit of money behind us. We've got some good players in there. We just need to make that change to not be in that relegation struggle, because you saw with Sunderland, eventually, you're not going to get yourself out of it.
Yes, it's a tricky one. I mean, I want Frank de Boer to do well, because, you know, he's a young manager, he's got a lot of ideas. The only thing is I'm a bit worried for him, in the sense that stint at Inter Milan may have really damaged his confidence. And I think that a few bad results for Crystal Palace, you know, in the next few weeks, I fear for him. And I think he's like 2-1 to be the first manager to leave as well. So that doesn't bode well for him. I mean, obviously, it's just betting, but I don't know. I really fear for him. And Crystal Palace, let's be honest, they're a big club. Regardless of what people say, they've got some fantastic footballers. You know, you don't attract internationals like Benteke if you're not a big club. Let's see how that goes.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. Like, there's a nervous optimism around Selhurst. Look, I think the Huddersfield game was a baptism of fire. Four pre-season friendlies wasn't enough, especially when you're trying to go from a counter-attacking team with pace and power to a possession-based 3-4-3. Four pre-season friendlies isn't enough, and we obviously haven't done all our recruitment yet either. We've got one fit striker in Benteke. We need another centre back. Who that might be, I don't know. All Palace players would love to see Sacco come back in the door, but you know, I think some people are kind of wedded to that idea. There's other players out there that's cheaper and probably better value. He was a great player for us, don't get me wrong. Right wing back's a problem position as well. Joel Ward isn't cut out. He's been a fantastic servant to Palace, but not cut out for that role. So, and obviously, the much maligned Wayne Hennessy in goal. Great game against Liverpool, but there's one great game for every 10 where people roll their eyes and when they see him in goal. So, yeah, mate, I can definitely see it. I can definitely understand it, but I agree with you with the Inter thing. My view on it is I don't think he can afford to not succeed at us after Inter. I don't know how well he'll come back from the Inter debacle, and then if this goes completely wrong as well, I think he might struggle after that.
Yeah, because you don't want him to end up being this manager that just collects jobs. You know, you've got certain managers that have had 15 to 20 different jobs, and every time they get appointed, you're thinking, why have they brought him in? You know, I'll say that about Andre Villas-Boas. You know, as good as he is at the moment in China, could he do it in the Premier League? I don't think he could. It proves that Spurs and Chelsea, he wasn't great. I don't know, to be honest. I just think that De Boer obviously needs time. Every manager needs time to bed in their, you know, their philosophies and whatnot. But I think, as you said, it was a baptism of fire, and I don't think he really understands the physicality and the demands of the Premier League, and he needs to learn that quick.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure. Looking back on it, I think probably the three worst games we could have had in the first game of the season was one of the three promoted teams. They're all buzzing. It's the first game in the Premier League.
Yeah.
We're trying something new. We've come off an awful season. People are still like, our home form's been atrocious for 4 years. You know, as soon as we can see the first goal, there's that. You know, everyone says the fans are fantastic. And I don't get to many games, but like, I watch every single one of them, and you can hear them on the TV, and it's amazing. But as soon as we can see the first goal at Selhurst, there's a collective groan because of what's been happening. And then two goals in 2 minutes, and if we'd lost 3-0 to Chelsea, Man City, Everton, Arsenal, Spurs, United, someone like that, people would be like, whatever, it's first game of the season, it's one of those clubs. We've gone to Anfield, we've looked a lot better, we've only lost 1-0, Benteke's missed a sitter, and all of a sudden the optimism's back, it's not so bad anymore. The big one is Swansea on the weekend. These are the type of games we have to win. To be brutally honest, we have to get some points on the board early, bit of confidence in the team, and we can't waste a lot of these games. Like, your Swansea's at home, your Huddersfield's at home, your Burnley's at home, your Watford's at home, those type of clubs that, you know, teams like us and them will target to get points.
Yeah, I think Zaha is a big loss with the injury. But then you've got players like Townsend who can really step up when, you know, when the chips are down. And I just think, as I said before with De Boer, he needs to adapt. He obviously needs the time. The 3-4-3 does work in the Premier League. We've seen it with Chelsea, how they've done it. But the difference is that Chelsea were less direct. I mean, let's be honest, with De Boer and his philosophy and his mentality, it has to be a free-flowing 3-4-3 like he had at Ajax. And I don't think that Palace have got the players yet to do that. Hence the reason why he needs to learn how to grind out results, like your 1-0s or your 2-1s. I agree with what you said. Saturday is actually a big game. Swansea's a massive game, even now. They're another team that obviously they're going to be fighting relegation this season. So it's a six-pointer already.
Oh, 100% agree. 100% agree. And, like, you know, you look at someone like Chelsea, I mean, they've had 10 years of Abramovich's money and being able to buy players like Hazard, Fabregas, Costa. Every player's comfortable with the ball at their feet, whereas we've bought battlers that have, you know, when we needed to, they've dug in and they've got us the points, and it might have not been pretty, but we've stayed up for 5 years in a row. All of a sudden, we've got this new system that it might freewheel up a bit, and that'll be amazing. I mean, he's been fantastic over the last couple of years. He's come on leaps and bounds. That guy in space, there's not that many better in the Premier League at the moment. But we've got to play to people like Benteke's strengths. Benteke's strength isn't running the channels, working hard up front. Benteke's strength is get the ball wide, whip a ball in, and let him beat a defender in the air. He's the best header of the ball in the Premier League. Stats show that week in, week out, season on season. So we've got to learn that, yes, keeping the ball at times is great, but we've got to get this movement. That I guess that's one thing that was missing against Huddersfield is we're keeping the ball, but there's absolutely no movement. You need, I mean, for the 3-4-3 possession-based football to work, you need a one-touch passing, movement all over the shop and confuse everyone. But we always like one-touch passing to blokes standing in the exact same spot as when they were before. Mm. And look, I'm not a football back coach. I'm nowhere near the level of Frank de Boer's knowledge. I'm not saying that, but just from me looking in, that's what it looked like. So it just takes time to gel. But yeah, win on Swansea, win at the weekend against Swansea, then I think people will be fairly happy down at Selhurst Park. But lose, and then it's going to be very much squeaky bum time already for a bit, I think.
Yeah, I know. The thing is, it'll be a bit unfair to pass judgment on him after three games. I mean, bearing in mind that the three previous managers recruited players who, as you said, like to get stuck in. He's not that kind of manager. He wants players that are confident on the ball, that, you know, they can release it early and, you know, one-touch passing and whatnot. So I don't think the squad needs a massive overhaul because you've got players that can do that. But at the same time, I think you've got more grafters than anything. But again, you obviously need that in the Premier League. You need that mentality. You need to have players that can dig out of the mire when you need it. And as Sam Allardyce did on numerous occasions with different clubs like your Sunderlands and obviously yourselves, he dug you guys out of the mire with this never-say-die attitude. And like I said, I'm just a little bit worried about De Boer's confidence being a bit damaged if you lose on Saturday.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, you jump on social media after, like, 15 seconds of a football game, and then you've got some fans spouting off some rubbish about something. Yeah. So, you 100% agree. I think, like, when we've started to move, we've got someone like, for example, Luka Milivojevic, who has been a revelation. He's a hard tackling, strong, very good defensive midfielder, but he's happy to be on the ball. And like bring players like him in there, he's exactly what we need. Like Wilf works unbelievably hard. His upper body strength's improved year on year, and you can see that he's a lot harder to shake off the ball. Benteke's a beast and has great hold up play for a big guy. You put Kabay in there now, the problem is a lot of rumours about Kabay leaving. Like, Kabay is a perfect foil for Luka for Milivojevic in there. Loftus-Cheek has looked absolutely class. You can see that he's played with some good players in the system before. De Boer's brought in Riederwald. Again, another Dutch player that's happy on the ball. But then you look at someone like, for example, I hate to pick him up, but someone like Joel Ward, who just isn't looking comfortable at all. He doesn't want the ball anywhere near him. He doesn't want the attacking players, the opposition to attack anywhere near him, but they're all picking him out. So, like, there's not a massive overhaul, for sure. But we've moved on people like Joe Dedley, who did a job for us. I've done a fantastic job at that. But we've moved past that now. If we want to be from in that spot 8th to 12th in the league where Parrish and De Boer are talking about, then you can't have Joe Dedley on the bench anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So, agreed, we don't have a massive overhaul, but there is some. We certainly do have a lot of work to do still in the window.
Absolutely. Well, Rob, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, mate. Do you want to tell our listeners how they can get in contact with you through your LinkedIn or social media, or anything like that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's great talking. So the website, if you want to have a look at the website, it's just topcornerrecruitment.com. I'm on LinkedIn, so my name is Rob Seltzer. But if you type in Top Corner Recruitment, then I'll come up on there. We've got a Facebook page. It's not particularly active at the moment because I'm in the process of bringing someone on that knows more about social media than I do. I know how to click on a like button, and that's about it. If any players, anyone's interested in talking to us about how we can help them or any advice, we're more than happy to do that too. And yeah, just keep spreading the word and getting it out there, and hopefully we'll become a much bigger part of football in the future.
Great stuff. Well, mate, thanks for your time. It's an absolute pleasure.
No, mate, thank you very much for giving the platform to get it out there. Great talking, and hopefully speak again soon.
Absolutely, mate, absolutely. Before I wrap it up, just a quick shout out to our friends, partners, sponsors. We've got FNX Network, My Sportswear, Youth Energy, the guys over at Surfer Sports News, Harry, Alavi and Dan are doing an absolutely fantastic job there, so you can listen to their show on iTunes, SoundCloud and even the FNX Network. Nick Tanner Promotions, Lucky Seven Management, DCS Sports Legal and even Bite Back Publishing. All great partners of ours. Until next time, guys, take care.